Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to another edition of the FootballDiehards.com podcast. My name is Skip Lacombe. Lots of stuff going on, real exciting time as we get very close to entering the regular season. Joining me once again is senior editor of FootballDiehards.com, Bob Harris. Bob, how's it going?
It's going great, Skip. How are you doing, my man?
Doing well. It's an exciting time. You can feel that excitement and energy in the air. It's football season.
Yeah, you know, it's been made a little extra exciting, unusually exciting this week in the NFL with some unique changes being made.
Yeah, been a lot of changes at one particular position, and it's not really on the field, but it's on the sidelines. The offensive coordinators seem to be dropping quicker than flies. We've seen the third one go this week in Buffalo with Turk with their offensive coordinator. What's going on?
Yeah, Turk Schoner got it today. Jeff Jagodinski got it Thursday, and Chan Gailey got it in the Chiefs earlier this week. I think, you know, if you look, we've got some new coaches coming in the case of two of the guys, and it seems like they maybe want to get things right, and they're admitting to a mistake before it comes back to haunt them and is more complicated to fix. In the case of Haley and Raheem Morris, the Chiefs and Bucks respectively. The deal in Kansas City is, Chan Gailey was a kind of a holdover guy, from the old regime. I think they were using Todd Haley's offense anyway. And Haley decided he wanted to be the head coach when he arrived, and he thought he would let someone else handle the play calling. But things haven't gone that well this preseason. You know, it's been a mixed bag for the Chiefs all preseason, just in terms of personnel, injuries, implementing the scheme, getting guys all pointed in the right direction, which I think Todd Haley is doing a pretty good job of that. He's been a bit of a taskmaster, a hard-nosed guy. Still, you know, Dwayne Bowe still isn't at the top of the depth chart, even though I have no doubt he'll be an opening day starter. But, you know, he's playing those kind of games. But now he's decided that he must call the offense. And, you know, in his case, I have a hard time arguing with him. I mean, you know, he was the play caller for the Cardinals last year and route to the Super Bowl, very prolific offense. So I don't have a big issue with that. And I kind of wonder if at some point Chan Gailey wasn't kept around in case Matt Castle didn't completely work out. Maybe they could use Thigpen in that spread offense they used late last year, where he was pretty effective that Gailey put that offense together and made Thigpen pretty productive, you know, over the last at least a 4-week period. So maybe they were waiting to see what, you know, Haley was waiting to see what's happened. That the upshoot is Haley will be calling the plays, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, is it at all surprising at this point that before we've even seen an official regular season game, these guys keep getting fired?
Well, I think in the cases of the younger coaches, they're basically, you know, the new coaches that are coming in, they're just admitting to a mistake before it costs them more. You know, you look at Raheem Morris, a 32-year-old guy, comes in as head coach, doesn't have a lot of experience, goes out, in his own words, he was trying to put together a dream team of coaches. Well, it turns out that Jagodinski, while a pretty good offensive mind, has a little trouble, you know, moving it from the classroom to the field. And that seemed to be the complaint. He lacked when they were studying the offense, implementing the offense, he was great in terms of play calling. If you listen between, you know, behind the scenes and read between the lines, he just basically wasn't ready to be doing that. And if you remember, he was an offensive coordinator for the Packers, but Mike Sherman, the head coach, was the play caller. And then he moved on to Boston College, where he was the head coach. And his running back coach, Mr. Logan, well, I can't remember his first name, but former running back, he called the plays. Now, Logan is still in Tampa Bay. Greg Olsen takes over as the offensive coordinator. They're going to keep the same, you know, basically Jagodinski was implementing a zone blocking scheme. They're going to continue to use that. Olsen was already pretty much in charge of the passing attack, so that's not really going to change. And so I don't think you're going to see a huge glitch. There were some rumors early that maybe Jags wasn't on board with Leftwich being the starting quarterback. That wasn't the case. It was just he was struggling to translate his chalkboard skills onto the field. And so, hey, if that's the case and you're Raheem Morris and you're a young guy and you're just coming in, why not just fess up to the mistake and get it over with? And I'll tell you what, Dick Geron did the same thing in Buffalo with Turk Schoner, although I have a sneaking suspicion that Ralph Wilson had a little more to do, the ownership had a little more to do with this one than some of the others. Hey, Ralph Wilson's 93 years old. He wants to win something. They looked at the offense this preseason, and it's easy to understand why he felt that might not be coming to fruition. The offense has been abysmal. Granted, they've been without Terrell Owens, and some of the pieces haven't been in place, but it's been pretty horrible. And if you follow like our team notes on the August update, I mean, I was putting notes in as early as Tuesday that if the Bills didn't get off to a fast start, the patience level would not be high for Schoenert. Well, little did we know that there was absolutely zero patience. They'll bring in Alex Van Pelt. Will move from quarterback's coach to coordinator. They're still committed, they say, to running the no huddle. Maybe when they get all their personnel on the field, it'll run a little better, or maybe with just a little bit of a different perspective from the guy calling the plays, it'll do a little better. I'm somewhat skeptical that they're going to see a huge improvement for no reason at all. But, hey, there's a big difference between preseason and regular season. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. The bottom line in Buffalo is everyone's butt is on the line. I mean, if they aren't winning by week four, Dick Geron isn't going to be around. I mean, this Ralph Wilson wants to win, and he wants to win this year. He don't know how many years he has left, and he wants to see some more success, and who can blame him? He's impatient. He wants to deliver for the fans, and you got to admire his will, even if you don't agree with some of the tactics. You know, I'm not sure I'm on board with ownership, you know, pushing their dominating, you know, imposing their will on the decision-making process. But, hey, in the end,
Al anyway. Davis, anyone?
There you have it.
Well, anybody else need to be looking over their shoulder right now, or do you think we've probably seen a majority of the changes we're going to see at least until the season gets started?
I'm pretty sure we've seen all the changes we're going to see. You know, there's going to be coaches on the hot seat. I mean, Dick Geron is on the hot seat. I mean, he started out on the hot seat. There may be other guys that develop as things go along. You know, in Dallas, I mean, there some things need to happen there. Jason Garrett, the offensive coordinator, was kind of the – you know, there was a lot of finger-pointing last year, a lot of it by Terrell Owens. We'll see if that finger-pointing continues. If Jason Garrett suddenly becomes a genius again without Terrell Owens, you know, perhaps if you believe the reporting of one Ed Werder girding his little group of his little cadre of guys against Garrett. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes on there. And, yeah, I do think people in Dallas are on the hot seat. They always are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, still a couple of quarterback battles that are up in the air. First of all, with Detroit still between Stafford and Culpepper, who do you think is going to get the nod when it comes to week one?
You know, Culpepper got the toe injury last week, wasn't able to play. He's going to have some stitches, you know, that are going to heal over the next week or so. You know, I kind of thought that gave Stafford the edge until I watched Stafford on Thursday. It wasn't all that impressive. He does have a big-time arm, and I do kind of agree with some of the local observers who think if Stafford is the quarterback, he'll go downfield more aggressively, and perhaps to the benefit of Calvin Johnson. He's more willing to put the ball into coverage and stuff, but as we've seen on a number of occasions, that's not always the best move. This is the NFL. The defenders are a little more aggressive, too, and a little more capable. So, you know, I think that might hurt him early on. I thought all along Dante Culpepper would be the starter for the first month or so, and they would try to work Stafford in at some point, you know, as they see the offensive line maybe starting to gel, or they realize it's not going to gel and they have to make other adjustments to do that, to deal with that. So I'm thinking I'm going to stick with that strategy. I'm going to think of the Culpepper. But the problem is we're probably not going to know. I don't see the head coach there, Jim Schwartz, giving us a lot of advance notice on this one any more than Eric Mangini will in the other big quarterback mystery that's going on right now. You know, some of these guys still believe there is such a thing as a competitive edge, and that making the opponent game plan against two different quarterbacks is a good thing, and maybe it is. You know, in the case of like Cleveland and Detroit, really, what do you have to lose by making it more difficult for the opponent to do things, even if it makes it more difficult for your team? So,
yeah, who do you think has the edge in Cleveland right now?
You know, I thought all along that it's Quinn Brady and Brady Quinn. Get it backed up. And I'm going to go ahead and stick with that. You know, I do hear people, you know, Marcellus Wiley on ESPN is a big backer of Derek Anderson. I've been a big backer of Derek Anderson in the past, too. I do think he has the bigger arm, and he might even be the more capable guy. If you look at last year, you know, some of the issues he had were, heck, nobody caught the darn ball. You know, Braylon Edwards led the league in drops. I mean, if 15 of Braylon Edwards' 17 drops had been catches, we might not be having this conversation right now. So, you know, there's an argument for both of them, but I think in the end we're going to see Brady Quinn as the starter, you know, the younger guy, and maybe they try to move Derek Anderson at some point. But we may get a situation, you know, with Eric Mangini, the thing you can count on is – is as much secrecy as possible. It may be a weekly decision. We may be treated to one of those. We'll let you know on at game time, and I'll watch my BlackBerry for the text from the team 5 minutes before kickoff telling me who's going to start.
It's going to be refreshing your Twitter, and you'll find out.
There you have it.
All righty. I want to go down the list. There's a couple of injuries going on right now. I want to find out and get the status on. First of all, Brady and his shoulders, how is he doing? It seems like he's getting some work, getting his arm back limbered up. Is his shoulder okay?
Yeah, I'm thinking the fact that the only other quarterback on the team right now is a rookie, undrafted rookie named Brian Hoyer is a pretty good indication that Brady's feeling good. It sounds like they might trade for somebody. Maybe A.J. Feely's been mentioned as a possible backup. But they've let Andrew Walter go. They let Kevin O'Connell go after his last performance. Not very impressive. So we have Brian Hoyer, who's right now the only other quarterback on the roster. We'll see if that holds up. I wouldn't bet on it. But Brady is fine. I mean, you look at that whole situation, and we look back, you can look back to this spring as kind of an indication of how they handled this. When they let Matt Castle go, I'm pretty sure they knew Tom Brady's knee was going to be okay. And when they let everybody but Brian Hoyer go this week, I'm pretty sure they knew Brady's shoulder was going to be okay. I'm saying draft him if you haven't already, and if you have drafted him, chisel him into stone in your week one lineup. It's going to be you should make out like a bandito, assuming he doesn't take one to the knee on the first play.
Well, yeah, we'll certainly be watching for that too. Kyle Orton, how is his upper extremities going?
His upper extremities are awesome. I can attest to that. I have seen him shirtless, but the problem is obviously his finger.
Okay.
The finger is the issue. He had the open dislocation, which is a horribly painful and grotesque thing, as we saw him jog off the field with blood dripping off his right index finger on his throwing
hand.
What
a man.
When the joint comes out through the skin, it had to have hurt at some point. And, I thought his game face was hiding and masking the pain. And hey, the stitches may be the biggest issue for him. You keep hearing, the reports are that Denver's confident that he'll be ready, but they also say they're confident Chris Sims is going to be ready. Well, Chris Sims had a high ankle sprain that most people thought was going to keep him out, into the middle of September at least. So, when you hear they're equally confident that Kyle Orton and Chris Sims will be ready, I guess I start asking questions. How ready can they be? And do they really want to go with Tom Brandstater if Orton isn't ready? And you know what? It looks like they will, because they haven't made any quarterback moves either. The obvious one was maybe picking up Kevin O'Connell when the Patriots released him off waivers, but Detroit beat them to the punch, and maybe a possible trade. If you look at Kevin O'Connell, there's two natural destinations for him: former Patriot people like Josh McDaniels in Denver, and perhaps Scott Pioli in Kansas City, where they already have another ex-Patriot quarterback. So maybe Detroit made that move with some kind of down-the-road trade in mind. But right now, I'm going to go ahead and assume nobody drafted Kyle Orton as their starter.
Hopefully not.
And suggest that you make the appropriate adjustments to your roster via free agency to make sure you have a legitimate backup for week two in case something happens to your frontline guy week one and you don't have to rely on a guy who may or may not be ready to go.
Or come week three, you could maybe just trade for Michael Vick, because it looks like he'll be eligible then.
Mike Vick will be eligible week three, and boy, won't that be fun.
Any surprise there?
I don't know if it was a real surprise. I kind of almost thought that they would let him come right back in. Maybe the sip and the vodka at the hotel and with reporters didn't work in his favor. But hey, three games, he'll be back in, and then, Philly fan will be frothing at the mouth every time Donovan McNabb underthrows somebody, overthrows somebody, every time the Eagles are behind, every time the offense isn't jiving, every time they have a three and out, it's going to be an issue. And you have to wonder how much McNabb is going to enjoy this all year. And hey, you have to wonder we've seen Andy Reid pull him once before. Well, do they do it again? I mean, I think the next time you pull Donovan McNabb, if you're Andy Reid, is the last time you pull him.
Especially if you're putting Michael Vick in his place.
Yeah, I don't think McNabb's going back in. He's going to say, "To heck with you.
If you don't want me to play, I'm going to take my ball and go home."
Yeah. Hey, and there comes a point where how can you blame him? Everything we've heard is McNabb was in front of this, pushing the Michael Vick to Philadelphia thing. And, that's what we hear publicly. There was some speculation early that maybe that wasn't the case privately, but You know what? He's got to live with it now. The devil is there, and the devil's name is Mike Vick, and he's, you know, not a very, I don't know. Looking back, I mean, was Michael Vick ever the best quarterback in the league? No, he was a dynamic, exciting athlete who's very dangerous and scared people, and that's what he'll still be. I don't know that he's, you know, he'll never be the best quarterback on that roster as long as Donovan McNabb's there. The problem is, you might not need to be the best quarterback on the roster to get ahead of McNabb. I mean, it's Philadelphia. It's a strange place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, back to some injuries, too, that are causing some questions, as you mentioned, expatriate quarterbacks. What about Matt Castle and his knee?
You know, there's some – there. You know, again, opinion is mixed on that. There's people who don't think he'll be ready week one, maybe even a couple weeks into the season. It's a strained MCL. They haven't called it a sprain. You know, if he gets it braced up, he's not one of those guys who moves around a whole lot either, just kind of like Tom Brady, same mold. So if he can, you know, drop back and get the ball out, maybe they'll let him play. Otherwise, their options are pretty limited. Brody Croyle did look remarkably like Brody Croyle in last night's game, so he clearly isn't the answer. Tyler Thigpen hasn't proven to be the answer. There's been some teams interested in trading for Thigpen, and I'm not sure if those talks are totally gone by the board or not yet. It seems to me as long as Castle starts, they'll keep Thigpen around. And we've seen what, you know, we do know what he can do in a certain role, but with Todd Haley calling the plays, I don't know if Thigpen's going to, if the offense suits him like Chan Gailey's offense did. So we're going to have to watch on Castle. And again, you know, all these cases of the injured guys and the quarterback mysteries, they're all kind of this Patriot coaching tree or management system where the iron curtain is up, kids. I mean, we're gonna be lucky to find things out, and you know, that's not to say we won't be looking, and that's not to say we won't find them out. But it's tough. You don't get a whole lot from these teams, and it'll be interesting to see how much we're able to figure out and how early we'll be able to figure it out. It's maybe a good time to remind everyone the Flash update cranks up next Wednesday. You'll get constant news updates every day. We'll have all the injury reports, all the practice reports in real time. And believe me, I will be watching all those situations closely and looking for every little scrap of intel I can round up on them.
We're almost in overdrive.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Carson Palmer, too, and his ankle. How's that looking?
I'm thinking that's looking pretty good. He warmed up pretty extensively before last night's game. He didn't play, but they had him out there on the field working with receivers and stuff. He says he's ready to go full go. I don't really doubt that. I think he'll be fine. If I had him, if I drafted him as my starter, I'd be eager to play him.
If you drafted Kevin Jones, Bears running back, you're going to probably be having a bad day. He's going to be out for the season now, it looks, right?
Yeah, but kind of if you drafted him as maybe as Matt Forte's handcuff, and you can make an adjustment there, look for, you know, Adrian Peterson was kind of like maybe a iffy guy to make the roster. Now that there is no Kevin Jones, I think he becomes Kevin Jones. Garrett Wolf will still probably have some kind of third down role, although they haven't used him a lot the first 2 years of his career, and he is better at special teams. I think they'll use some mixture of Adrian Peterson, Garrett Wolf to back up Matt Forte. But the best news that might be is for Matt Forte owners, if the plan was, you know, to have a former first-round pick in Kevin Jones on the field to take some of the pressure off Forte, maybe it's a little harder now for them to take that pressure off Forte, and you make out through increased touches or more touches than he might have otherwise gotten.
What about Knowshon Moreno?
Knowshon Moreno, I think, is going to be ready. Yeah, they got him back on the practice field this week. They didn't let him play against the Cardinals last night, but they do have him on the practice field in a non-contact jersey. I'm hearing rumors that Lamont Jordan isn't a lock to make the roster, the final roster. So I think you're looking at a situation there, of course, where early in the year might be a little confusing. They may bring him in more slowly in the mix because he hasn't had all the work with the offense. But I think, you know, by October or so, people who drafted him will be very glad they did. I think of all the teams you look at where there's going to be committees or there's these clouds of uncertainty over the backfield, New England being, you know, the prime example of that, where who knows if it's going to be Fred Taylor, Lawrence Maroney, Sammy Morris, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, Kevin Falk. They'll all have some kind of role in that offense, or at least those who make the final cuts. So I'm thinking you'll see a similar approach in Denver until, you know, the young guy gets it together, figures out the offense, and gets ready to go. And I do think he will. And one of the reasons they drafted him, remember, is because he was a pretty capable pass blocker in college. I think Josh McDaniel would like to have a guy on the field every down if he can. And if Moreno turns into that guy, I think he'll get. I think if he's the guy they thought he was when they drafted him. After all, they went with the 12th pick overall to draft this guy when they needed a lot of help on the other side of the ball. So he's there for a reason, and I hope they use him for that reason.
Absolutely. One more player suffering a season-ending injury is Saints tight end Billy Miller. Is that creating any waves?
You know, it doesn't create waves. He was pretty productive last year in a reserve role, but a lot of that was because of Shockey's issues, injuries, and attitude and various things. I think if this has any huge impact, they don't really have another strong receiving tight end on the roster. Maybe it helps Shockey keep Shockey on the field a little more. And guys who were who had the nad to go out and grab Shockey on draft day as their first tight end might make out a little bit. Hey, anyone associated with the Saints offense that's on the field and is healthy is probably in line for a pretty decent year. And that includes Jeremy Shockey. But assuming he's healthy, is it's just not something we've seen for a few years. So that's my only issue with Jeremy Shockey. I think Billy Miller's absence will help him a little bit, keep him on the field more. But, Shockey has to do his part and be available to stay on the field.
Spending a few more minutes with Bob Harris, senior editor of FootballDiehards.com. And Bob, I want to get an update on this whole Brandon Marshall thing. Are they going to be able to kiss and make up there, or do you think this is already too much love lost?
They're going. Here's my bold prediction. Much like I said at one point back in what, May or June, that Brett Favre was 110% going to be a Minnesota Viking.
Uh-huh.
Even though I thought I was wrong for a while. I'm going to say yes, they are going to kiss and make up. Brandon Marshall's going to realize he spent this time during his suspension carefully considering his position, realizing that he doesn't have any real value to anybody other than the Broncos because he's under contract with them, and he's going to make $2+ million this year. And if he screws up and irritates them any further, they've already set the bar. I mean, they've the hammer is back. They can drop it, and when they drop it this time, instead of the, $600 a week these guys get paid during the preseason, it's going to start costing him 1/17 of $2 million, or a considerable sum. And I do think he's going to get on board. The question then becomes is, who's the quarterback? How does the offense work? Has Eddie Royal already moved ahead of Brandon Marshall in kind of that Wes Welker style, 112 catch guy? That's going to be a little bit busier and maybe relegates Marshall to a big play kind of role. And is Marshall really ready to be Randy Moss and run down the field and make the big plays that they're going to ask him to? His attitude and how he reacts to this suspension and his overall situation, my hope is and my belief is somebody is smart enough around him to tell him what's going on, tell him what time it is, and he will figure it out and get on board. And, we see a lot of times you see these issues with players, and rarely once the season starts do the issues continue to really drag them down and make them miserable. I think Carl Pickens, I can think back to, is a bit of a problem in that regard for the Bengals a few years back. But I'm betting on Marshall to come around and start doing his job, and then all we have to hope for is somebody can get him the ball.
Hypothetically, they're not able to make up. How much egg is going to be in Josh McDaniels' face having lost both a Pro Bowl quarterback and a Pro Bowl receiver?
I know a lot of people really think he's out of his league, so to speak, in dealing with these people. I think he's handled this the way he wanted to. I don't think he wanted Jay Cutler in the first place. Now he doesn't have Jay Cutler. I think Josh McDaniels believes, being, raised by Bill Belichick, as it were, that no one guy is the team. Now, there are talented guys, and you need talented guys at this level. There's no doubt. But if you can get serviceable players, and there's a lot of talent, I think if you across the entire league, the level of talent is probably within 5%. I mean, the best guys are maybe 5% better than not the best guys, and that's what separates them. So if you can get a system in place, and get guys doing what they do best on every play and make the best use of them. But that puts a lot of pressure on the coaching staff, puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and it remains to be seen if Josh McDaniels or Kyle Orton is capable of dealing with that pressure. But I really do think that the perception out there, and a lot of it, you hear a lot of these ex-players that are on ESPN and the NFL Network, and they're kind of down on them. But when you listen to football people, people who have been in the business side of football, you don't hear that same criticism, and I think it's going to be interesting to see which of these sides is right. My belief is McDaniels kind of has a pretty good idea what he's doing, and he calls his Uncle Belichick every night and says, "Did I do right, boss?" And Belichick tells him, maybe this, maybe that. I think, you know, I think he's getting some feedback and he's doing things the way he wants to do them. He needs to win early. I mean, he does need to win to get some credibility going. But if you listen to people who follow that team every day, you know, there's a lot of belief that the players who are on board are really on board and believe he can get the job done.
Yeah, granted, Belichick's one of the greatest football minds of our times, but how long is he going to be able to ride the coattails of dropping his name?
I don't know. I don't know if he's, you know, riding the coattails or if he's just
and that's being a little unfair to him, but
you know, I think it's just employing the system, and part of employing the system is getting the system in place, and part of getting the system in place is getting 53 guys in the locker room all looking at the same goal. And you know, if you look across the board at the NFL, the reason the Patriots have had the success they've had is because 53 guys all think one thing. They all act the same way. They are a true team, and that starts at the top. And that it's what Bill Belichick instills in that team that's made them successful over time. Anyone interested in finding out more about this, I recommend a book called Patriot Reign by Michael Hawley. Gives you a fascinating insight into how Bill Belichick controls the hearts and minds of these young fellows and some of the older fellows. And you know, you look at some of the veterans. I mean, look at Corey Dillon, a career malcontent, goes to New England and plays great. Look at Randy Moss sitting on the bench in Oakland with his legs crossed, yawning, and he goes to New England, and he gets on board. They have a way of doing things in New England, the Patriot way, they call it, and it works. And that's what some of these other younger guys, McDaniel's trying to do in Denver, and it's what Scott Pioli and Todd Haley will be trying to do in Kansas City. And, you know, it works to a degree. Eric Mangini has had mixed success with it. Romeo Crennel had no success with it. You know, hey, nothing is guaranteed, but we do know the system, when implemented correctly, has brought a lot of success to the Patriots.
Definitely yield some results. Well, finally, the final cuts are going to be made soon to get everybody down to the 53-man rosters. Who do you think's on the bubble right now that may or may not be cut?
You know, so the big one that everyone's talking about right now is Jamal Lewis in Cleveland. You know, he's been a little bit slow, a little bit tentative. But it is preseason. Have we really seen it? The driving force behind a lot of this talk has been the rookie James Davis, like sixth-round pick, I believe, who has played really well, racked up a lot of yards. Mangini kind of threw a little bit of cold water on that today, saying, hey, you know, a lot of guys do well in the preseason. And, again, I'll remind you of my favorite guy, Travis Jervey, who averaged over 10 yards a carry in preseason play over the course of his career and never did anything once the regular season started. A lot of these guys you see do well in the preseason. Look at last year, David Clowney for the Jets, and to some degree this year. You look at all these guys that do really great things, James Davis for the Cleveland Browns this year. He's averaging 7.8 yards a carry this summer. Well, part of that is because they're really fast, and there's no game plan, and they just run, you know, and they're not playing against the best defenses, and the defenses aren't scheming to stop the offense or the individual players. So, you know, I think before I believe Jamal Lewis is gone, I think Eric Mangini values veterans a little bit, but he is rumored to be on the roster bubble. Another guy that's rumored to be on the roster bubble is in Seattle, Deion Branch. They have the rookie there, Deion Butler, who's done a really good job. Branch makes a lot of money. Do you want to pay a guy, you know, the money that he's going to make to be a third wide receiver? That's a big question there. I've been hearing some today that maybe Jamarcus Russell isn't responding that well to having an insane guy crawling up his backside every day in Jeff Garcia. And if you look at some of the things that have been going on in Oakland, Garcia is kind of the vocal leader of the team, and I don't know if you want your backup quarterback to be that guy when your starting quarterback is kind of a quiet, subdued chap who takes a whole different approach to being a leader. And so we may see Garcia available here at some point, too.
Very well. Bob Harris is senior editor of footballdiehards.com. I want to quickly mention, too, the little game we got going on the website, where if you can correctly predict, we were going to go a whole show without mentioning, but you know, we got to plug this. If we can go and predict the time that Brett Favre or the day or week will go down sideline due to injury or other reasons, you will win $100 courtesy of Football Diehards.
And that's awesome. And again, I'll remind everybody, the next week the Flash update cranks up. Been doing the Flash update since 1993. There's a reason I've been doing it every year and making a living at it. I think you should all check it out and find out why.
It should be very good. Well, be sure to check that out. That'll start going down Wednesday, correct?
Well, you got it, man.
Well, I can't wait to be on that and not leave my computer all day. Anyway, be sure to check out the website, footballdiehards.com. We also got Fantasy Nation going on as well at fantasynation.com, so be sure and check that out. Until next time, this has been the footballdiehards.com podcast.